Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is the Clone Wars Report. Sometimes we get music. Sometimes we get the laughter of a little golem-like snake.
Oh, Morley, you're at tricks again.
Oh, Morley, I feel like there should have almost been, if it was 1985, Morley would have got his own spin-off Saturday morning cartoon.
Yes, the Tales of Morley.
The Tales of Morley, and there's even a pun there. That's great. The Tales of Morley or Morley's Tale?
I hate when I accidentally pun. Oh, the taste of my mouth is horrible.
I hate it as well. I'm sorry I pointed it out. We're going to move on. We're going to talk a lot about Morley, the depth of that character, the absurdity and the fun in some pretty dark episodes. We are finally here. We are at the end of season 4 of The Clone Wars, The Return of Maul. In particular, we are talking about these episodes. Season 4, episode 21, Brothers, written by Katie Lucas and directed by Bosco Eng. Season 4, episode 22, Revenge, written by Katie Lucas and directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. Now, Ken, I have seen differing opinions online about whether the two Asajj Ventress episodes that we just watched are their own story, and then these two episodes are their own story, or if they're all really kind of one story that encompasses the tragedy of the Knight sisters, the Knight brothers, Asajj's journey. It's, you know, kind of semantics at a certain point. But how do you feel about the relationship between the two episodes we talked about last time in these two episodes?
I really do consider them four separate parts of one story. I absolutely do. Or four connected parts at times. Yeah, I really do. I understand why. And they're broken up. So you just kind of naturally kind of might separate them in your mind. But it just works with Ventress coming back at the end. And there's a little, they're definitely in chronological order, but there's a little bit of, well, wait a minute. Okay, Dalzin's a ghost, but not a ghost. She's alive, dead. What is she? You know, now, you know, Ventress is hanging out back at Chalmers. I have some of those silly little questions, but they don't matter. And I think at the end of the day, it's a connected story. And it's a cheap, maybe an answer, but I was watching a featurette and it's, and Katie Lucas, Filoni, Witwer, and James Arnold Taylor. And they're all talking about these four episodes. And it just worked. Hearing them talk about it as one arc maybe settled that debate for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so happy that we broke them up in terms of talking about them, because while there are these like big ideas, I feel like the first two episodes are so much about Asajj, right?
Yep.
And Asajj is definitely present. She definitely informs everything that's going on in these episodes, but these episodes feel very different than those Asajj episodes to me in terms of tone and the just utter mall focus, you know?
Yeah, it's a double album, and the first side is acoustic, and the second side is all rock, all electric guitar. You know, it's the same band, different albums for sure.
Well, feel free to share any insights from that featurette as we go, because I looked for it, but I didn't find it in the normal page, so I must have Googled poorly.
It was a deep YouTube search. Like, it was the 10th thing that popped up if you were type in the Return of Maul. So you're not alone on that. It took me a while.
Okay, excellent. Well, feel free to share the insights as we launch into this. Are you ready for the summary?
Yes, sir.
Dread. Across the galaxy, Force-sensitive beings sense a darkness rising. Count Dooku, Anakin Skywalker, Asajj Ventress, and Yoda all sense something from the past reawakening. Little do they know, the Night Sister leader, Mother Talzin, who recently survived a near extinction of her people, has tasked Dathomirian Night Brother Savage Opress with finding his long-lost brother, the former Sith apprentice, Darth Maul. Armed with a magic amulet and lots of anger, Savage terrorizes a small diner on the remote planet of Stobar. The diner is named Plop Dribble. This is also terrifying. The amulet glows in reaction to dust on a freighter's cargo. Savage boards the freighter and forces the captain to take him to the planet of the dust. Savage arrives at the trash planet Lotho Minor. There he is offered guidance by an anacondan named Morley. To be very clear, Morley is a large talking snake guy. After brief attacks by junkers and acid rain, Morley betrays Savage, dumping him into a deep, dark lair as food for his master. Savage is attacked by a mad, freakish beast. The beast is actually Darth Maul, his severed lower body replaced with a janky collection of robotic spider legs, his horns long and his mind shattered. Maul speaks in broken bits of Sith code and half-remembered conversations with his old master, Darth Sidious. The only thing that brings clarity and focus to Maul is his hatred of Obi-Wan Kenobi and need for vengeance. Savage returns the wounded Maul to Dathomir, where Mother Talzin uses her magics to restore Maul's mind and fashion him a new pair of robotic legs that resemble a goat's or a satyr's. Maul reveals it was his singular hatred for Kenobi that indeed helped keep him alive. He and Savage depart to the world Raidonia, where Maul slaughters innocents and sends a mocking hollow to the Jedi Council, daring Obi-Wan to stop him. Kenobi is convinced it's his responsibility to stop his old enemy. Mace Windu is concerned that Obi-Wan should not go alone, but Yoda senses an ally will come to Obi-Wan's aid. Arriving on Raidonia, Obi-Wan is quickly captured by Maul and the surprise presence of Savage. The two Darkseid Knight brothers torture Obi-Wan in the cargo hold as the freighter takes off. But meanwhile, Asajj Ventress, in her new chosen life as a bounty hunter, has come across a 1,000,000-credit bounty for Savage. She pursues him to Raidonia, boards the freighter just as it takes off, and awakens an injured Kenobi. The two old combatants then trade compliments, insults, and lightsabers, but they form a definite united front against their mutual foes of Maul and Savage. A brutal battle ensues. Maul mocks Obi-Wan's helplessness on Naboo as he watched Maul murder Qui-Gon Jinn. Obi-Wan lashes out, and Maul taunts Kenobi that his fury has unbalanced the Jedi. Realizing they are not ready for this fight, Kenobi and Asajj work together to escape into the freighter's cockpit and launch away from the cargo hold. Maul and Savage are left drifting in space. Savage expresses concern that the Jedi will hunt them. Maul smiles. He's counting on it. And that is our wrap-up of what this episode's all about. We'll discuss it more. That's our summary.
No, great summary. And I was even making a note. Listen to your summary. You highlighted a little sub-theme that was kind of present. I was looking to focus on, too. So great stuff. Dread. I always think, what is the word that Joseph's going to use to lead into this summary? Dread is great.
What's the one word that the narrator gets to shout at the very beginning of the summary? That is a fun discussion. But, man, I was really affected by the dread and the choice to spend that much time on it. And I haven't watched these episodes in a while. So it's like, I don't remember who all pops up again. Or is this really just like a tour of the galaxy, people going, man, bleep's not right.
Bleep's not right is definitely a way to look at this.
Yeah, that's the vibe. That's the vibe. So what is your overall reaction to these two episodes? Do you love them, like them, struggle with them? Where are you at?
Dump all those into this bucket. Dump all of them in. And it ends, as always, it ends in a pretty good story, doesn't it, for me as a fan? This begins absolutely, and I know Maul's been mentioned before. In fact, I'm so excited to, for you, because in your life, these are finally the episodes you were waiting to get to, they finally won. But this begins one of my favorite things in Star Wars, turning this wild idea of bringing Maul back. And I know some things and concepts, art and EU stuff have been out there, but in canon, bringing him back and turning it into some of the most compelling long game storytelling in the saga, right? It just, the Maul, Kenobi, 20 plus years, it's 30 really. It's amazing storytelling. And it all begins with this wild, crazy episode. I don't believe it should have worked. I just don't, but it did. But you mentioned it. I have to admit, I think blocked, not like a negative way, but just plain didn't remember every detail from these episodes. Like, like I was saying earlier, like a thousand she's sort of alive, she sort of lives, sort of a ghost. Maul and Kenobi actually strike blades. Like, I forgot that happened pretty early on. There's a talking snake. I just no memory of that. Like, Morley pops up. I was like, oh, that's right. So I have a little, because of all that, I have a little bit of struggle with these episodes in the sense that I sometimes initially reject the weird in Star Wars, even though weird is so part of Star Wars. So particularly this first episode, but what I end up loving about them and I end up loving about taking this deep dive, Joseph, is that they're so over the top and they're so weird and dark and bizarre that it reminds me that Star Wars is a fantasy and a myth. I can't ignore that, right? I love the detail. I love the war. I love all that kind of stuff. But you can't watch these episodes, especially knowing how great the Maul story becomes, and worry about silly little questions of how or what. Those are questions we ask. And Talzin alive, fine, I'll ask that a few times. But it doesn't matter. The only thing is important is the why. And there's so much just why bursting out of the weird seams that these episodes are built on.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. For the Talzin thing for myself, I think it really goes into what you're saying. I just kind of interpret it that one of her abilities is to sort of just blend into the, fabric of Dathomir. In that she can take physical form, or she can kind of just be like, I am one with the luminous entity that is Dathomir. And I'm a green glowing mist, and then I reform,
I really agree with you on that. It's intriguing. There should be a whole study on Talzin. We'll do that later on for some.
I can't wait for the book, The Physics of Mother Talzin. I think that's going to be really great. These episodes are utterly fascinating to me. I've said many times on recent episodes of Clone Wars that I enjoyed all of season 4 the first time I watched it, but I was just so speed watching it because there's that teaser where Mother Talzin gives Savage new purpose of like, but your brother's still alive, go find him. And I'm like, oh, wow, I bet that's next episode. Like, no. So I enjoyed all these episodes, but it was really speeding to get to here. And then these episodes are fascinating because even once you get here, you get some answers. And you get that initial crossing blades of Maul and Kenobi, but like the full impact of what it's going to mean for the galaxy that he's back, what it's going to mean for Kenobi's soul that he's back. That doesn't happen yet. So even in that my first viewing, I was like, I got here. I got to this sort of next level that I wanted to be at. And then I was like, oh, this one then told me to go to the next level. It's like, my mall is not in this castle. Like, he is, but that story, the impact of his return isn't quite there yet.
No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah. And it's wild. It's weird. And again, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson, his head probably explodes if he watches these episodes. Like, there's too many, like, how did he did it? And it's like, no, the answer is hate. The answer is this. The answer is that. And this story's trying to tell you that those kind of things and teach those kind of lessons. And that's where you need to engage these episodes on.
Yeah, I think that's just so important of, like, Star Wars has a lot of different tools in its narrative collection, as many different stories do. But Star Wars, I think, because of its influences, will sometimes have moments or episodes like this that are just so much of the storytelling is almost in just sheer mood and aesthetic. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, these episodes are just so much about the emotion of something dark and twisted is returning. And there's a great sadness to these episodes. Yeah. And it's just all about this foreboding mood and aesthetic. And I'll talk some more about it, because I almost consider it a theme, just kind of like all of the imagery and how it signifies rot and decay and sadness and stereotypical in our culture signifiers of evil and all that. And that's just so a huge part of the storytelling, you know, and that includes all of the players of the galaxy going like, wow, something's really not right. You know, that so much of the story is just, what is the impact of that feeling that everything is out of balance and getting worse, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, something wicked this way comes. Even beginning with kind of Dooku and Grievous experiencing too. I think I only miss Palpatine. I would have, you know, taken him sipping his tea, going, "What?"
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, you're right. It's like a roll call of everyone going, "Uh-oh."
And it's about Maul and Savage, right? Because yeah. Dooku is concerned about Savage, and Anakin's. It's familiar. I think it probably means Savage, since he actually crossed sabers with him, but it could also mean Maul. It's about, you know, both of them. Yeah. And so I think it's really, in with Asajj, she's literally talking about, I thought it was my past. You know, it really is this great Star Wars idea of the shadow of the past, of, you know, things that have happened before will maybe happen again, or your choices are going to come back on you. That mood to me is really established by all that, you know, force sensitive people sense and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. All wrapped up with a talking snake.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple other big picture thoughts for me. I like how much this whole episode is just feels to me, this arc, like an exploration of the pain of the dark side. We'll get into it more of just, we're spending a lot of time of seeing people utterly broken and tortured by being abandoned, being afraid that they're going to be abandoned, being in cycles of vengeance. And these are yet more episodes where the aesthetics are kind of like cool, but I don't think you'd watch this episode and go, it would be great to be Savage. Like, no. I want to be Maul. That's cool. Like, it feels like episodes that are trying to paint a portrait of, like, this is hell to be at one with the dark side.
Yeah. Hell. And then suffer, all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then to your point, you know, I think these episodes, you know, connect to so many Star Wars conversations we have, because they are crystal clear on the why of Maul's return, right? Yeah. He wants vengeance. He survived on hate. All he cares about, he's lost his purpose, and all he cares about is killing Kenobi. So, like, the storytelling value of that, the why of that, is very clear. And these episodes do not give a damn about the details of how, right?
No. In fact, I wish someone at some point said somehow Maul has returned. I really wish that, so you could just kind of look to the camera and go, see? It's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly talk about it in depth, but that comparison is just, it's hard not to watch these episodes with all the conversations that we've been having about Palpatine's return and that line in mind. And there are more canon details about the exact how of how Maul returned. So I did look those up, and we can talk about those in the canon section.
Absolutely.
Final thing for me is, I feel like season 4 of the Clone Wars, it's so great to watch it this way. It's so clear that there are all these hints and discussions in earlier seasons of the Jedi going, wow, we're really trying to wrap up this war fast. It seems to be spiraling out of control. in season four is just like, yeah, it's really out of our control. And there's just darkness everywhere. Pong Krell is turning, you know, slavers are coming out of the woodwork. You know, it's a very, very dark season. You know, the one bright bit of kind of hope being a 3PO and R2 having a little adventure where they accidentally murder people.
Right.
that's the bright shining moment of season four, the accidental murder.
Maybe at the end we can talk even a little bit more about season four if you want, but like wrapping up season four, I was coming into the season going, here we go, the Riff Tamsin season, let me see where I stand with this stuff. And it's just, that's such a small part of this, really. Could you almost call it like a midpoint of the overall kind of Clone Wars era of just we got an intersection of things, successes turning to failures and things starting to slip, and the darkness is just prevalent all the way through, and it's not sunny from here on out.
Yeah, it just feels like the rot has really set in. Like Yoda knows this is coming, you know, when he says The shroud of the dark side has fallen. Like, well, now everybody's feeling it in their bones, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's talk about the morals of these two episodes. The first one is a fallen enemy may rise again, but the reconciled one is truly vanquished. And the other moral is the enemy of my enemy is my friend. What do you think about these two morals?
Oh, the enemy of my enemy is my friend just makes me think of working in the YouTube space. It's just kind of how it's not a great thing. But that struck me as that I was really intrigued. And what I love when sometimes the Clone Wars morals are just like, here it is. Other times you're like, hey, here it is, but find different ways to connect to it. And maybe what you pull out of it. And I have a fallen enemy may rise again, but a reconciled one is truly vanquished. It hits me in a level of like true solutions and how do you do it, and how much is Obi-Wan responsible for Maul, and what could he have done different? And I don't know, you know, what he could have done different on Naboo to start this all off. And I was really drawn to that one. We're going to talk about the repeating cycles. You kind of already mentioned them too. And Star Wars does a lot of that to teach a lesson. And it's like, how do you truly get rid of vanquished? Could be, you know, could be some violent connotation to that, but just how do you truly reconcile with someone across the table from you? And these episodes really start to deal with that. So I was drawn to that one.
Yeah, me too. The enemy of my enemy is my friend is, you know, an intriguing truth across a lot of different human interactions from the micro and the macro, and is very explicitly like, yes, that's what happens with Asajj and Kenobi, arguably in that second episode. Mm-hmm. But a fallen enemy may rise again, but the reconciled one is truly vanquished. Like, that is like, that feels less about the moral of that particular episode of the Clone Wars, but like what the whole storytelling arc of Maul is going to be about. That feels like the moral of, you know, the Twin Suns episodes of Rebels, you know?
That's a great pull and a great connection. I really like that. I agree with that one a lot. Did they have that entire story planned out? You know, Rebels wasn't a thought in anyone's mind at this point. I know. But to see, like, hey, if we're going to do this, this is what we need to do. That's interesting to me.
Yeah. And I think for me, it what it goes to in this particular episode, in this arc, is this idea of, yeah, violence feels like a solution. But, you know, if you just strike someone down in anger and hate, they'll kind of always be with you. Maybe they'll even physically return. They'll be vanquished when you know, the demons of your past will be vanquished when you turn around and reconcile with them for yourself. And like, hey, Maul might still be trying to cut off your head, Kenobi, but if you're at peace with exactly who he is, why he exists, your relationship with him, then he's vanquished for you. And I think the same for like Asajj and Savage don't get as much time, but I feel like that is what's going on with her as well, of like, I'm going to put my past to bed. I'm going to turn around and face it.
Yeah, and she does it with a little bit more of a place of strength, right? Because of the growth she just went through in the previous two episodes with her. She's in a good spot to do that finally.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get into those big ideas. For you, what were the themes or what ideas were at stake in these two episodes?
Yeah, we'll start here. The destructive power of hate. We know, we say often, the light side builds, dark side destroys. And from there, you know, I just thought of how none of this is healing. None of it is surviving. This Maul literally held together by hate. Those spider legs There's some floating pieces around it. You can go into some of the stories of the design. And this is one of the things from those featurette. Filoni was like, we wanted actually to, we couldn't afford to do what we wanted to do, which is the legs were floating. Like the hate, the hate was literally keeping them all together. And that's pretty, you don't even need that to get that. That point is pretty clear, right? And from there, Joseph, I went to the Twin Sons as well. What is that point? The conversation we love of Maul just kind of look what you are, this rat in the desert, and Kenobi's line of look what I've risen above. Well, now look where we find Maul, and he never rises above this. Never for the rest of his life rises above where he is. This avatar of hate, literally barely surviving, kept only alive by his vengeance, and that just starts the big themes for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that. These episodes are so crystal clear about like the danger of vengeance and what an empty thing it is to live on. Mm-hmm. And that was a big idea for me of like, okay, well, they're so clear about Maul. His purpose is just vengeance, and that tracks through his whole story, even though he's got different schemes, different successes and failures. He's got this charm, but underneath it all, it's just this raging scream. Mm-hmm. And I thought the arc really dealt with this idea of what is your purpose? A lot of focus being on Maul surviving, on vengeance, hatred for Kenobi, literally keeping him alive. He's got a lot of quotes about it, but I think my favorite is just saying directly to Kenobi's face, you cannot imagine the depths I would go to stay alive, fueled by my singular hatred of you.
Mm, yeah.
That is a hell of a thing for a sentient being to say to one another. You are the reason I am alive, because I hate you that much.
Yeah.
It's a clear purpose statement, a clear mission statement. And I think the episode does kind of talk around the edges about Maul's realization that might have been the purpose that kept him alive, but a part of what was also eating at him that he's not being totally honest about is that he has lost all of his other purpose. Mm-hmm. His purpose was to be a part of this grand return of the Sith, and he was supposed to take the mantle at some point and successfully become better than Sidious and kill him, right? And now he's lost all that. There's that great line when he's in the ship, still on the spider legs, still with a broken mind, saying, far, far above what once was great is rendered small. He's, talking about himself. He talks about how the Force is out of balance. And Savage is like, yeah, we got these Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And Maul's like, ah, yes. So it began without me. Mm-hmm. So it's not only that he has vengeance as his purpose, it's that he's lost all other purpose, right?
Absolutely love that. The Clone Wars pull is, love that line. We can talk about that too. But also, now that we get more of even the complete story of Maul folds out another storytelling too, where, the idea of why didn't the Jedi pick me? Even that purpose was taken away from him a long time ago. That's a great thing about him. Yeah. Yeah. And when you just detach from what you feel is your purpose and what you backfill that purpose with is where a lot of this danger lies.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that gets reflected by the other characters. So Savage is, pulled from his community by Asajj and Mother Talzin. He's given this extra power and he's given this purpose, this mission of killing Dooku. But that falls apart. He feels betrayed by Asajj, and he kind of goes broken back to Mother Talzin, and she gives him new purpose. He's literally like, well, what am I for? And she's like, well, go find your brother. And he goes through all of this, and sometimes it seems like it's just because he wants purpose. He doesn't seem that jazzed when he finds his brother. He's like, I don't know. He just keeps talking about Kenobi. I don't know what his deal is. And like,
he does say that.
He's really, I don't know. He just goes on and on about some buddy or some place named Kenobi. Like, after he goes through all of this, he does rescue his brother. His brother gets restored. And there's that beat at the end where he's like, well, why are you happy about them getting away? Why are you saying you can wait for your revenge? The Jedi are going to hunt us. And, we can focus on Maul being like, good, that'll work out for me. But for poor Savage, like, he's kind of back to where he was. He's just being hunted by Jedi and in theory Dooku. And now he's got his brother with him.
Yeah.
But what is his purpose? What did he get? What meaning is he after?
Yeah. Love that. In service and now in continued service, and a tragic character indeed. And there's a lot here with both these characters, the lack of choices that they've had in their life.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think in contrast with that, I think a big, we don't spend as much time with Kenobi and Asajj, but their sense of purpose is this great contrast to Maul being vengeance and Asajj just being like, somebody give me a task. So I have identity. Kenobi's purpose, he knows it. He has, he made the choice. He has examined his Jedi beliefs and he stands by them. And his purpose is to defend that, you know, seeing the slaughter of innocents, like, yeah, it probably is a trap. I don't care. This is my purpose, to defend people. But he does have that moment of weakness where he loses sight of that. Maul successfully baits him. You know, he seeks vengeance. And Maul, you know, says, your rage is unbalanced to you. That is not the Jedi way, is it? And then Kenobi's like, whoops, right. I'm going to leave now. That, like, we're outmatched feels like Kenobi saying, like, yeah, physically I'm beaten up, all that. But it also is like, this is not the time. I'm not in the place to do this, right?
Yeah, I put this kind of down as Maul versus Kenobi, fueled by hate versus fueled by peace. And Kenobi does feel rage. And we've talked about it. To be angry is natural. He has a lot of reasons to be. He's angry in Phantom Menace. But as you once pointed out so wonderfully, like, he only gets that victory over Maul when he calms himself and finds a little more peace in that moment on Naboo, right?
And he looks at the bigger picture and like, what's all around me, literally.
Literally, including a saber I can use. And so to see that, and to have that moment, well, I love that moment. It is kind of, we always, we love our Kenobi and the poster child for a lot of right ways in the Jedi Order. And he makes some mistakes, clearly. But I love that he pulls back. I love it. It's a powerful lesson. Fueled by hate, fueled by peace.
Yeah, instead of going like, yeah, you're right. And like, he does. He lashes out and he gets, you know, sort of defeated up to that point by Maul. But he really is able to go like, yep, I crossed the line a little bit. I'm going to disengage. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the final big thing about this big idea of purpose is this is where these episodes really connect to what we went through with Asajj right now, right? That Asajj has kind of been through everything that Savaj has, not quite as horrific as Maul, but she's been rejected. She has lost everyone that she's ever cared about. She went home to Dathomir and was welcomed by the Night Sisters for 5 minutes before her past brought this devastation, right? She's been through hell. But then we go through her arc and she is finding peace because she is finally making choices for herself. She is choosing a new purpose as a bounty hunter, and she's going to be a bounty hunter on exactly her terms, answering to no one, right?
Yeah.
So it seems like she is this person with agency, with a purpose that is absolutely her own. It is not handed to her by anyone else. And she makes that very clear choice of like, I'm going to track Savaj. And there's nothing explicit in the episode about it to me, but I just kind of feel like it's not like 1 million credits. Great. Mm. It's like, I made that mess. I literally made him. I literally tortured him. Mm. I'm going to go clean up this mess, right? There's nothing about Asajj that feels like she is seeking vengeance. It feels like she is, like that first moral said, you know, reconciling with the enemy to vanquish them. And, you know, the fact that she could have been like, hey, I'm here to take care of Savaj. Kenobi on the ground, great. Bzz, put a lightsaber through his heart and I racked up some easy vengeance. The fact that she doesn't seek revenge on Kenobi when she so easily could, it's like Maul and Savaj are these pictures of being trapped in the dark side cycle, and Asajj has so clearly escaped it.
Yep, absolutely. Going back to what I said, this is not healing, this is not surviving. On the other side, you have some healing, you have some surviving, some true healing. I love that we're saying that. I love the drive and adventures there, and it forms that partnership is so great. It's so rewarding to have them on the same team, even for a moment. Some great banter, some great humor, but absolutely love what you're saying there about Ventress. It makes it a true continuation of that story.
Absolutely, the bit of banter. Obviously, there's a lot of it, but I really like the, it looks like I'm here to rescue you. When did you become the good guy? Don't insult me. It's all good banter, but it is really, I think, going to these ideas of like, Ventress, you're kind of doing the right thing, and she's like, I'm doing the thing that I think is right. Don't put labels on me, Kenobi.
Yeah. Don't you call me good?
Yeah, don't you call me good? What are some other big ideas or themes for you?
Some of the themes are in there as well. Go with me here. Strains of compassion from Savaj. we don't want to totally root for him here, but when he shows up, it's like, you're right. He doesn't quite know what to do with his brother. He also it is a little bit of there's always a bigger fish theme of this idea of like, I'm pretty bad. I'm badass Sauvage Opress. I'm tearing up diners. And then he finds something he doesn't fully understand that is perhaps even a little more dangerous than him. But out of that, he shows just enough compassion to move Maul forward, maybe to give Maul a chance to heal. I don't think Maul takes that chance. But I think compassion becomes it's an important thing in Star Wars. And from my perspective, again, go with me. Sauvage has a little bit from Maul, and it works.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is continuing this picture of like, yeah, people aren't just born like I'm on the dark side. I'm evil. Yeah. Right. In the Night Sisters and the Night Brothers and their weird relationship, there's a lot of dark side. There's a lot of, you know, pain and who is the strongest and all sorts of things like that. There's certainly a healthy respect for vengeance, but there is also like a bond between the Night Sisters and the Night Brothers in a way that there isn't in like the Sith, right? It's mm-hmm. all about use. So there's this little bit of compassion. And then along with that, this to me, another big idea in these episodes is just this constant fear of being betrayed and alone, right?
There's that Star Wars theme of connection. It's you're like approaching from the other angle, right? We're all trying to get the connection. And then if you don't, you lack that purpose, you lack that connection, that can breed fear. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I just thought it was great in these little sort of cracks in what Maul and Sauvage kind of say. But like Sauvage is obsessed with betrayal. Like the second that amulet, he doesn't think the amulet is working. He's like, Mother Talzin betrayed me. And we know Mother Talzin didn't. The amulet works. It's leading him to the right place. But he assumes that, of course, this, you know, being who showed him some kindness and mm-hmm. gave him some power and gave him some purpose. With her own motivations, obviously. She betrayed me. And he's really thinking that Morley's going to betray him. And Morley does betray him. You know, he specifically defines Sauvage by like, that's a, you know, Dathomir witch. She betrayed me. Right.
Yep.
So he's really living this life with no one to trust and kind of trying to think maybe he's going to find that with his brother, you know?
Yeah. Look, he can't even go to a diner and order food without thinking the waiter betrayed him. Like, you know, he can't even do that.
Yeah, there's bacon in this, isn't there?
Yeah.
I asked for no bacon. You betrayed me. And I love how much of Maul's, you know, broken chatter isn't. He claims he was kept alive only by Kenobi, but that is not what his broken chatter suggests, right? Mm. He is riffing on the Sith code when he says, through victory, my chains are broken.
Right.
And then I feel like when he says, always remember I am fear, always remember I am hunter, always remember I am filth, always remember I am nothing. Mm-hmm. So it seems like mentally he's going through this cycle of what he was taught. And mm-hmm. that in particular, the idea that he was taught by the Sith that he should have value, but he actually doesn't. Right. Mm-hmm. And it is almost like I went through this pain. I did everything I was supposed to be. I was fear. I was hunter. I was strong. I killed Qui-Gon. But then I felt a filth. I felt a nothing. And this other side of my teacher's horrible, you know, treatment and a horrible picture of who I am has come true. And then right toward the end of his ranting, he says, I must ask for mercy, master. And then he kind of yells at himself. Mercy is a delusion of the weak to think themselves strong. Mm. So he's just like trapped in this. His mind is going through these horrible Sith teachings that are a circle of I must be strong. If I'm not strong, I'm a failure and I don't even deserve to be rescued. Why won't anybody rescue me? I'm strong enough to rescue myself. No, I'm not. Like just trapped in this horrible cycle that it has mm-hmm. no one there to break it and mm-hmm. no one there to come and help him. No one there to say, it's okay. You failed. Let me pick you back up.
Yeah, a life of, again, a lack of choices made into a blunt weapon and a cycle of pain, cycle of suffering, and it's toxic. It's poison. It races all through him. And this idea that you can't even ask for help, you know, you can't ask for mercy. You'll be weak. That's dark side. That's dark side personified, like you said. That everything about these episodes is just a painting, right, of here is the dark side.
Yeah, and it's just one of the things that I was most excited about because every time I've watched this, I've just been really excited about Maul's back. This is creepy, though. His mind is broken. But really thinking about what is he saying and what does that mean and how does that attach to what we know about you know, Star Wars and the dark side, he claims he's only obsessed with Kenobi, but all he's talking about is Darth Sidious.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, yeah, again, this is why this ends up working so well, and how on paper or in that fateful hallway where George says, Dave, I got an idea, come here.
somehow Maul has returned. Figure it out.
Figure it out. And Filoni says, cloning, dark sciences, secrets only Sith knew to himself. And then Katie Lucas comes in, who, you know, and by the way, just, you know, I know there's a writer room that puts it together, but she leads these episodes, and she's just such a damn good Star Wars writer, man. And
just a rock star.
She really is. And to just go, all right, Maul's coming back. We are going to make a piece of art, a literal, almost just visual painting on a screen of what the dark side is and how Maul is trapped in that. Ah, man, it just works for me so good. I love it. You're talking about trust. You're talking about cycles of pain. You're talking about not having compassion for yourself and not even accepting the compassion of others. Man, it's dark.
Yeah. And there's then this great contrast. It's short and simple, but, you know, Asajj and Obi-Wan work together. They just put the disagreements in the past. They step off the cycle. They work together. Asajj literally picks mm-hmm. Obi-Wan up when he's wounded and has failed, and they survive.
The vision of almost stepping off the train of the train of pain, stepping off, and how both of them, especially Ventress, have taken steps to be, again, in that healthy position to do it. They've done the work, as they, you might say in a self-help conference, but they've done the work to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Especially for her. She's come a long way, and we're so proud of you, Asajj. We're so proud of you because we love you.
Yeah.
To do that, it's a great visual.
Yeah, and it just makes me want, you know, even more Asajj storytelling. There's some, you know, great mm-hmm. stuff. I love the Dark Disciple book. But anyway, any other big ideas for you?
So only one, this is one that, and here in your summary, you touched on it, and there's a quote from Yoda talking to Kenobi and just going, it is so, I fear. And when anytime a Jedi says, I fear, I always just go, okay, Jedi, because they're supposed to confront fear. and go with me here, and it's kind of a sub theme, but Yoda lets go of fear or that fear and mm-hmm. lets Kenobi go. Mace is saying from probably a smart tactical spot of no, we're going to send a squad with you. Maybe I'll go. And Yoda's just going, no, I have fear. I think this is not a great situation, but I've got to let you go. And it falls into the same thing of telling Luke, you've got to stay on Dagobah. And there's this of just like, what's the reasons for what you're doing? And I think he kind of feels that this is good for Kenobi. And even though I don't know what's going to happen, I got to let go of that. And you think of Ahsoka and Anakin, how many times that plays out between those two. I really just like that. I love this idea of letting go of fear and Yoda being the one to do that there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really struck by how much these episodes, you know, Yoda's been the one who, since Attack of the Clones, the Shroud of the Dark Side has fallen. Mm-hmm. There's been moments throughout Clone Wars, but increasing in season four where Yoda's like, yeah, no, this, we're losing our way. You know?
Yeah.
And this feels like when you watch in the flow that like Yoda is really not pressing all forward on the war. He is spending lots of time meditating and trying to, you know, hear the Force and trust it. Right. He has two insights of like, no, it's not just everybody else is like, ooh, a darkness is rising and something's up with Savage. And Yoda's like, no, Maul's back.
Yeah.
He has that clarity. And then there is that great, like, yeah, no, let go of fear. Don't just throw more, you know, more people at the problem. I listen to the Force and I trust that somebody is going to come to help Obi-Wan. Like, there's that clarity there, which is really interesting from Yoda.
Yeah. Love it. Good stuff, Yoda. He learns things along the way.
Yeah. Good job, Yoda. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, when you combine that with like discussions of like, you know, it's difficult to see the future because the dark side of cloud and everything, our ability to use the Force has been diminished. The fact that Yoda's like, no, I'm going to keep looking into light side and looking at trying to sense what is true.
Yeah. Sense what is true. Mm.
And then last thing for me, it's not really a theme. It is more just like an aesthetic and a mood, but just the sheer volume of death, darkness, and rot in the visuals, the aesthetics, the choices, right? You started off with Anakin, Dooku, Yoda, Asajj all sensing the horror. There's so much visual imagery of literally falling below, falling beneath, right? Morley's line, he says, they say he drags things down beneath, and they never come back, and just like underlines the word beneath, right? And almost everything looks like our culture's general presentation of hellish, of lost, of fallen, right? Everything is red, orange, dark, misty, rusty. I think it is significant that Morley is a snake. There's some, you know, cultural stories and moments that we have where, you know, you don't listen to a snake. It's a trash planet of literally the junked, the forgotten, the rotting, the fire breathers are these just demonic things. There's acid rain of like even nature is going to eat away at you. You got the so much Star Wars storytelling deals with this sort of mythic imagery of going down into the belly of the beast. You know, Boba Fett literally gets consumed in the belly of a beast, but you have Savage going down into the depths to get Maul back. There's the just devastated hellish community on Raydonia after their slaughter. And I feel like even the, like the freighter ship has this sort of that cargo hold where the fight happens is like this dark cave-like environment. And I'm really curious to see it, to know someday how much on purpose it was that this final fight with Kenobi, Kenobi does what he often does. He literally tries to take the high ground, right?
Yeah, you can, yeah.
He literally gets above Maul. He fails. He gives in to his rage. And the last beat of their fight before the escape is Maul knocking Kenobi off from the high ground in a literal image of Kenobi falling. To me, whether it was a choice made on purpose or not, it really ties into all these images and all this fear of falling into the death and the darkness and the rot.
No, you're absolutely onto it. And the only things I can remember from that feature read have the references to hell, but also just even how Kenobi himself, what he looks like against the backdrop of darkness and flames and fire. Yeah. And this is why I love, you know, I love the Exegol stuff in Rise of Skywalker, because it is a literal descent into Hades, descent in the belly of the beast. You take an elevator down. And I love it. And that's what going to the beginning of what I was saying, this episode, of how, yeah, you know, I could get caught up on some of the weird, witchy, magical, there's a talking snake, what's going on? But at the end of the day, no, this is, it is a parable. It is a fairy tale, and you are in hell. And that's where this story takes place.
Yeah, this story takes place in hell. I would love to have heard the narrator say that, but not literal. Thematically, this story takes place in hell. Or a trash planet. So we've talked a lot about big ideas in these two episodes. Is there anything in particular how it relates to larger storytelling, morality perspective of Star Wars that you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, just a couple things that I think even already started talking about the circle there. A lot of, again, would make sense with that theme, a lot of once defeated enemies returning in some way. Savage kind of reappearing on the scene. Again, Talzin, like, she's still around. She's still there. She's not completely gone. Even after poking, you know, Voodoo Doll Dooku, she's around. Ventress is still going strong in her own way. And, of course, the big one being Maul. And how that connects to this idea of the Empire, which leads to First Order, Palpatine returning, all those things. It is the cycle of hate, the cycle of evil, and how just those obsessed with power and revenge and vengeance are just going to keep going until you break that cycle. And how do you truly defeat that? How do you truly heal from that? And these episodes kind of deal with it. And I love that Star Wars is always going to put that in front of you. The Yub-Nub victory is not the end of the day. And it's still what's inside people that will always have to be confronted. The light and the dark in all of us. And how do you best do that? You've already talked wonderfully about that train of pain and stepping off. So I can't add much in there, but I just love that it just made me think about all those things in Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's great to present it. Yeah. As a cycle of like the dark side will always attempt to rise again. And it is up to people to, you know, try to help avert that. I also just think it's, with this being kind of established in the lore of Star Wars, I don't even want to say canon, but because I don't think it's that technical. I think it's more the lore, the idea that, you know, whatever the Zabrak physiology is, being cut in half, you could still cling to life out of sheer anger and fear and pain. And is like, I don't want to be done. I will not accept this. I will not accept death. That is a part of the dark side that, you know, connects to lots of great storytelling we've had from like the Darth Momin, the spirit staying in the mask. And it really connects to Sidious of that idea of I will cling to life unnaturally.
Yeah. Yeah. Not let go. Not let go.
Any other thoughts about, we've talked a lot about the ups and downs of Palpatine's return, how much that for us in Rise of Skywalker, we do think that the why is told really well. And the how is, you know, it literally is a combination of dark Sith clinging to life and dark science manipulation, cloning, all sorts of unnatural stuff, but also how it really bothered a lot of people because the clarity of but how distracted them from enjoying the rest of the film. Do you have any other insights after watching Maul?
Do I have any other insights other than to me it just reinforces the use of Palpatine again. The how Palpatine, I get in a big movie, in a big motion picture in 2019. I understand the need for clarity. I'm not saying to ask how is an entirely dangerous question. You should always ask that. But this just, it just puts a stamp on, again, I keep going back to fable, myth, parable, allegory, lessons for all of us. And again, engaging the story on that and just seeing, because so much of these episodes had been kind of pushed out of my brain, right? I remember Maul's a spider. His horns are large. I kind of remember that. Actually go into it and see the story they're telling. It's number one, very similar in that poetry kind of way. And I think it's an important part of the Star Wars story, this lesson.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, it is just a reminder of, there isn't a line as sort of blatant as somehow Maul returned.
Yeah.
But we're dealing with all Force sensitive people who are open to like almost anything is possible through the Force. Like, you know, I think it is important for me to remember that somehow Palpatine returned came from Poe. And Poe is not like a Force sensitive character. He's I know how to physically fix my X-Wing when it's broken. Yeah. So maybe if we had a character coming from that perspective in these Maul's episodes, we might have had what? He did what with robot legs? Doubting it more. That's a little bit of a side point. I think my main point is that I really understand people watching Rise of Skywalker saying Palpatine is this large figure in pop culture. The end of Return of the Jedi is predicated on the fact that he died. So when I see him come back, I'm going to be distracted unless you are really clear with me about how. I think that's valid. I understand it. But I think what these Maul episodes drive home to me is that the style of storytelling that Star Wars is often interested in is at tension sometimes with modern audience perceptions. And I think that's what's going on in Rise of Skywalker, because what we're seeing in these episodes is a very similar storytelling style of we are interested in why Maul came back, what it means for him as a character, what it means for Kenobi, what it means for the dark side. We are not at all interested in physically how did he get those robot legs. That's just not a concern of these episodes.
No, it should, nor should it. How boring would that be? Of how do you eat? And okay, just tell me the rest. You can get caught up on that. And I think I did initially. I'm trying to take myself back to the year this actually happened. I didn't reject the concept. I was intrigued by Maul coming back, but Spider Leg Maul did push me away slightly, you know, because I'm stuck on that of what? And just digging in more, you see the whole purpose behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've definitely been through that. I've definitely rewatched part of these episodes like, what exactly does Maul say? And like, oh, his hatred kept him alive. That's it.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, but I remember when I had that kind of enlightening moment a little bit later on, a couple years later when I thinking about it more, maybe especially when Maul started to pop back up in Rebels, I think it started to like, oh, good. We get more of this and started revisiting some of the ideas. And it's so clear. It's so clearly stated, but it's easy to miss because it's wrapped up in a lot of fun stuff, but a lot of crazy stuff, too.
Yeah. Fun, wild stuff. Absolutely. So any other big thoughts before we take a break?
Yeah. Only one. Just this idea of lack of compassion and how it can damage others, going a little bit to the Savage compassion, but even just breaking it out of that, because watching these two episodes, particularly the second one, it just made me think a lot about Maul and this life in which, like I said earlier, many choices were taken away from him. He's an absolute villain. He is fear and hate and evil. He's all those things on the screen and his purpose in the story. But I think about how this character, this being, you know, began born in blood almost in a way, and now goes back. The Jedi didn't find me. How come they didn't find me? Why didn't I have that purpose? That's not fair. I'm taken in by Talzin. I'm given to Palpatine. I'm turned into a weapon of hate. I do everything. Like, he's muttering to himself. That gets him nowhere. Gets him here. And how then you take that out and he dies in the arms of the one person he built his vengeful existence on. It's a bittersweet, tragic tale, and a lot of it about just a lack of compassion along the way and the choices that you make as well. Yes, it's Star Wars. Yeah. But it just made me, more than anything, it just ties into this big Maul picture, and it just makes me sad. It's a great story.
Yeah, it is a great story, and I think what makes it even better for me, you outlined so much of Maul's life and trajectory there, but there are these little glimmers of possibility of connection, right? I love in these episodes that Mother Talzin, when she's leading him, you know, back when he's still fractured, and she keeps calling him son of Dathomir, right? Mm-hmm. And it is really giving him this sense of like identity outside of purpose. You come from here, you are of here, I am with you. And there is more in that arc that didn't get made, that is the comic book, Son of Dathomir, about the connection between Maul and Talzin. So there is this possibility of family, of connection. I do just entirely, I can't wait to rewatch the episodes, but in Rebels, it feels like, yeah, he's absolutely trying to turn Ezra to the dark side and make him his apprentice and do the whole thing. But it also just feels like, I kind of like you and I'd like to hang out.
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. I can't wait to revisit that. Yeah, I think you mentioned Maul has a charm to him that kind of develops over the years of storytelling, both in Clone Wars, especially in Rebels. I think there's a little bit of that. There is a little bit of an old broken man who's like, hey, cool, I got a friend finally.
Yeah. And it makes me so excited to see the, you know, room we have for storytelling with Maul and that end with Kira. Obviously from her perspective, it is threatening, and Maul will manipulate her and threaten her, and it will not be a good relationship. But I can see also the possibilities. Is that a part of the story where like Maul thinks it's all about control and vengeance and all that, but he kind of just also wants someone nearby. He wants someone in his life.
Yeah, so sad. Just needed a friend.
Just get a friend, Maul. All right, on that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the final episodes of Season 4 of The Clone Wars, The Return of Maul. We talked about a lot of the big ideas. I'm sure we still will, but we're going to get into some of the great moments. Ken, did you have a favorite action moment in this episode or these episodes?
A lot of action in the episodes, but oddly enough, I found like less specific moments. I don't know if you found that too, but there were some things in there. I do like Opress versus the Junkers. Poor Junkers made an effort. Good design. I love the design of the Junkers too. But just to remind you that Savage, he knows what he's doing with the double-sided blade.
Yeah, no, it is quite vicious because it is like, oh no, surrounded by Junkers. He's like, good. Let me at him. Yeah. I think for me, the first one that I wrote down is when Morley does reveal that his whole purpose is to find food for Maul and, pulls away that board, and Savage falls down the hole and Morley's yelling, "I get the leftovers."
Yeah. Yeah. No,
Morley. It's an awful moment of action, but most of them are. And even though there is some action, some fighting, especially in that first episode, some of the moments of action I felt like were more like visual storytelling. I really loved actually this is in the second episode when Mother Talzin is healing Maul up to a point that she's got that green swirl of Night Sister magic and she's just ripping out shadows.
Yeah.
And that there's something I didn't expect anything in this episode to look cleansing and welcoming, and like there's something about that of just like, it looks like this, Night Sister spa treatment of like, please, how much can I pay Mother Talzin to rip some of the shadows out?
I called it Talzin's witchy workshop. Just putting together the legs and I love the visual of pulling out shadows and giving Maul a weird sense of clarity, not the right clarity. And again, she's such an intriguing character. She really is. She all evil? I don't know. I don't think so. Is she all good? Definitely not. But the witchy workshop, loved it.
No, I mean, in some ways, Mother Talzin just feels very, real of like, she seems like she wants to help her children. And then she's also has some stuff that she wants them to do, which, I think that describes many parents.
Yes.
I would like to help you. And also, I need you to do this. This is also an extremely sad action moment, but Obi-Wan's mercy shutdown of that droid on Radonia.
Okay, thanks. I'm glad you mentioned that. Explain more. Explain to me how.
Tell me why. So that droid is established, and I think in a good way, when like Maul and Savage are on their way there, of just like, oh, it looks like a pretty healthy, normal kind of Star Wars community with a nice astromech droid. And then we see everybody slaughtered and it's really vicious. And then everybody's dead and that droid seems like it lost its mind.
Yeah.
And is just ramming itself repeatedly into the wall, almost like trying to break its HoloLens so it doesn't have to remember what it saw, kind of thing. And then Obi-Wan walks by and does a little hand wave and the droid powers down.
It was so sad in a way.
I'm not feeling like tackling any large real life issues that could be reflected in that moment. I'm not feeling up to that on this particular episode, but it feels like that's what it's like that droid is trying to say, I don't want to remember anymore. And Obi-Wan's like, I'll flick the off switch for now.
Yeah. Yeah. It stood out to me too. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. weird favorite action moment, but it jumped out at me.
It's compassion from Kenobi.
Yeah. And then you get into the actual conflict towards the end once, you know, Kenobi arrives and confronts Maul. And I have a couple moments in there. Did you have moments in that big fight?
Well, first of all, let's just point out that poor Kenobi sure does get beat up a lot in Clone Wars, especially season four.
Season four really is the beating of Kenobi.
Just punch, kick, all to his face. My moment being an old pro wrestling guy there, when Maul force pushes Kenobi into Savage's clothesline. Great finisher. When the tag does.
Yeah, I had written that down. The force push into the clothesline is brutal.
It's like to work that. They're like, hey, I got an idea. I'm going to do this. And you just close. Oh, yeah, that's great. That's cool. Yeah.
It is a great dark side wrestling move for sure. What are other moments from there?
Just a lot of the fight. Again, just the memory of not that I thought the twin sons was the first time they met or crossed blades. But it just I forgot that how much they interacted, and they interacted with lightsabers, and to see Kenobi do it with a red blade at times was funny. They great banter came out of that, but also just stood out to me too. Just seeing them clash early on in that contest.
Yeah, that whole fight is just really great. I love how much Asajj is very kinetic, flipping around, doing, you know, the little 1-2 punches here and there.
Totally.
That's great. But I think the moment that I isolated, you know, I know Kenobi does not win this fight, but he has one good move. I love it when Kenobi kind of pivots out of Maul's strike, so Maul falls past him a little bit, and then Kenobi does the extra force push.
Yes.
And from behind and throws Maul into the crate ever so briefly.
Ever so briefly, yes.
Yeah. And then I think for me, the final one is I love Asajj's, when she decides to escape, she does that flip that kicks Maul as she flips, and then Kenobi gives her the extra lift, right?
Yes.
If this episode, these episodes, this half of this arc is about dealing with darkness, falling into a pit of loneliness and despair, and that is a great action moment. That's literally the opposite of Kenobi working together to give her the extra lift so they can escape.
Love that. I want to shout out too of Ventress when she first gets on the turtle tanker of doing the, she takes weird, you know, random slices, which I respect, and then flips up and then just like disappears into a vent. It was great.
Oh yeah. No, I love the random slices. Cause as I was watching the episode, I was like, I can't remember. Was that, you know, something functional? Or is that just Asajj's here kind of thing?
Yeah.
any other action moments for you?
No, again, overall, these are action packed episodes that just, it hit me a little differently. It seems like the same with you, of just more of an art piece versus watching a fight.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the fights in Clone Wars changed so much from like, yeah, this is fun, to, oh my. Mm-hmm. And this was cool and thrilling, but it felt more like the story was present over the fun thrill.
Yeah.
So let's talk about moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness. Probably more weirdness than comedy and whimsy in these two.
Yeah.
but what did you find?
But funny stuff. Like and it plays really, really well, right? It played the comedy, Kenobi's sass plays well against the darkness, and it was a needed kind of relief.
That's true. There's a ton of sass at the end.
Ton of sass. I like the beginning where Grievous to Dooku, you consider him a threat? Hack, 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 hack. I'm the strong one. It's hack, 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 hack.
That is true. That is a really, really good one.
Yeah. I like the diner the chef Lubo grabbing a frying pan. And if you look at the trivia gallery, it was supposed to originally be a blaster, but it just plays a lot better as a frying pan.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, that makes total sense.
The police droid says, don't point that at a Jedi.
Yeah, no, you're right. That stuff was very, very funny. I also liked Anakin and Ahsoka's little banter about Anakin being like, yeah, no, I don't want any more rations.
No, I wrote that down too. No, I'm hungry. I'm tired of those government rations. I'm like, man, Dexter's Diner's down the street, man. I don't mean to always mention Dexter's Diner, but you know the food's good there.
Yeah. I mean, but it's also just this picture of Anakin's like, he goes his own way philosophically and also eating. I'm like, I don't want that crap. I want a nice sloppy diner meal here at, what is it? Plop Dribble. Morley's weird over the top voice, it did make me laugh a couple times. Vent just like kind of teetering on the edge of kind of like almost a New England stereotype, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Ben Diskin does the voice well.
Mm. Yeah, like that kind of stereotype of like storms are coming, you know.
Yeah, well, because one of my favorite line of his was the when the fire breather creatures, but really droids, incinerators. So he says, "Yep, fire breathers, they'll get you."
That is the one that I wrote down too, because it really did sound like, is that an old man on a rocking chair whittling? Like, yep, fire breathers, they'll get
you. They'll get you. You see.
And then the one that's just like the line is a straightforward line, and it is pure delivery that makes it comedy or whimsy when Morley's like, so who are you looking for?
Yeah. Yeah. So going to that featurette again, this was based off of like a behind the scenes person at the Clone Wars who was kind of like their archivist, kind of one of those guys with a lot of knowledge and kind of the story, kept track of the story, that story editor type of guy. And apparently he sounds like this and is kind of this character. And it once got into a debate with George Lucas over the Transformers. And and they based this character off of him, including like the shape of his head. Yeah, I'll send you. You got to do the deep dive on YouTube to find it. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, no, this one sounds great. Is there any more information about what he was fighting with George Lucas about the Transformers about?
No, I'm dying to have that conversation. I see that conversation. Could you imagine? Like, what is George? What side is George on? What are they arguing about?
Yeah, because it could be something like deep about like, but what do the Transformers really mean? Are they just, you know, a way to sell toys, or is there value in the narrative, or is it more like, you know, absolutely Optimus Prime is the coolest?
Yeah. George going, I liked Rodimus Prime. I liked him. Yeah. So great.
Yeah. Is it too on the nose? Does it make any sense that Megatron is just a large gun? Does that work?
Oh, love it. Yeah, so anyways. And hearing that made me like Morley more, because they also tell the story of Clancy Brown, the great Clancy Brown at Savage Press. He gets a tour of Lucasfilm, and his young son's with him, and his young son is a diehard obsessed Clone Wars fan. As the whole tour, as he's Filoni's telling the story, as he leaves the tour, the last thing he sees is Filoni and a couple of his editors. And the kid, I forget his name, pops in and just goes, by the way, that snake was lame, and runs away. And I just made me love Morley more than I thought I could.
Oh, that is hilarious. Poor Morley. I also like when Morley thinks everything's coming up, Morley, when he pops in and assuming Savage has long been murdered. He's like, I'm here for my leftovers. Oh, no.
Everything coming up, Morley. That's the sitcom we need.
Just the utter shock of it's my day to day. Yep. The master killed some leftovers and left me some leftovers. So great. Yeah. In the second episode, I like when Maul is still on the ship, the turtle tanker, and is kind of losing it. And he just says, Kenobi, and closes the boxes together with the force to kind of hide. And then Savage is like, fine, stay here.
Yeah. Yeah. He is a feral animal. But the fact that even that Talzin uses like a green orb to get him out, like he's a cat, is hilarious to me.
Yeah. And there was that mood for me where it was funny with Savage, but it kind of reinforces like, I thought I was finding my super powerful, amazing brother so he could take the galaxy by storm. And this guy doesn't even want to get off the ship.
It's Savage is us at this point in time in the fandom, right? Maul's back. Wait a minute. This is Maul.
He needs a horn trim. Come on. I did like, it's a very cheeky, I'm sure, but I did like the bounty hunter who says, a million credits? Who is this Savage Opress?
No, it's cheeky indeed. I wrote that down. Savage Opress, like, because I've been, I'm that guy.
Clearly fans reacting to the name Savage Opress. Did they talk about that at all in the
They didn't get into it. I would love a little bit more. No more. It's still one of my, it's so my least favorite name in Star Wars that I love it. It's just the way it works.
I mean, for me, it's one of those things, and I think the Clone Wars does it a lot. The Clone Wars has the deep, the mythic, the thoughtful, the life lessons, but the Clone Wars plants its flag of like, and also weird pulp movie, B-movie, Savage Opress. Like, yeah, that is one big half of Star Wars, and you know, there's going to be many a Savage Opresses.
Yeah, and Morley talking snake, and you're going to be on the Millennium Falcon, and there's going to be a blob named Claude. Like, that's what you got. It's Star Wars.
That's what we're doing here. That's what we've always been doing here.
Yeah.
All right. So for me, the rest of my moments of comedy and whimsy are all Kenobi banter.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Same.
Kenobi Ventress banter. So what were some winners for you?
So I know that they see the video, they see a hologram, they know it's Maul, they feel it's Maul, but you know, there's some doubt, I guess. Mace kind of said something too, but I just love sassy Kenobi being like, I'm not sure I've made you acquaintance. Like, you know what you're doing. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, there is a lot of him, of Kenobi having the psychological battle with Maul, trying to make him feel less than, right?
Yeah, totally. Well,
what was great was now small. In my favorite, I think, because I just totally forgot it was in here, was like, I like your new legs. Yeah. They make you look taller.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just such fighting with shade.
Yeah, it almost sounds like, like Ewan McGregor on the set with Ray Park or something, you know, both aren't tall gentlemen, like over 6 foot or something. So just almost like banter between them. Like, oh, you look taller. Oh, shut up.
Yeah. And it so got the, like, you remember why you have new legs, right?
Yes.
It's really a twisting the lightsaber blade there, I think. There's so much banter between Kenobi and Ventress that is great. But I love Kenobi saying, oh, what a lovely sight to wake up to. And Ventress saying, don't flatter yourself, Kenobi. You've never been much to look at, especially now. Because I think it really speaks to, you know, since the Clone Wars animated film, they've had this, like, are they flirting? What's the deal? And it feels like Ventress is also like, yeah, you know, I've given it some thought and nah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's even just the whole, like, you know, you're running away. Well, I learned it from you. Like, it's
funny.
It's funny. It's rom-com funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all great. And it builds on the relationship they've always had in the Clone Wars. So I think it's great. Final one for me is the Kenobi, you know, Asajj giving Kenobi her lightsaber, the one she's attacked him with many times, and saying, I'm going to need that back. And Kenobi saying, that's fine. Red isn't my color.
Yes,
absolutely great stuff. How about you? What are some more?
The last one for me that I mentioned is again, not a fan of puns and wordplay. I know you're not as well, but I also enjoy it here where Ventress going, your brother looks like he's half the man you are, Savage. Like, I love it. Come on.
No, it's so calculated to make them feel less than.
And again, I'm rambling on about the importance of compassion. Not a lot of compassion from Ventress and Kenobi in these moments, but it's a banter. You know,
it's a part of the fight, right? I mean, they are trying to unbalance him.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and it's pretty mean.
Yes.
But fair enough. Maul's been mean too. All right, we're going to move on to canon lore connections to other bits of Star Wars. So I did look up on Maul's Wikipedia page the details, the how of his return. So I'm just trying to remember, like, is it out there? So Wikipedia says that Maul did indeed use the Force on Naboo to pull himself into an air vent and fell into a trash container. Okay. And we know that from the book Star Wars, Everything You Need to Know.
All right, there you go.
So we needed to know that. And then he was collected from Naboo and got dumped on Lotho Minor and then did indeed make those legs out of junk himself. And that comes from added context in that book that I think we both own and haven't had time to read. That takes stories from the Clone Wars and tells them from the perspective of individual characters. That's from that book, Clone Wars, Tales of Dark and Light.
Right. My gosh, that's on a shelf somewhere in my house. Time to pull that down again.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess for me, it really adds to our conversation about the difference between the why and the how of, like, it's pulled from a kind of resource coffee table book, one half of it. The other half of it is pulled from, you know, a very recent book about Maul's perspective of just, like, I think for me, it's just like, yeah, that's cool that those things exist and that they're on Wikipedia. And if you're curious, you can know those things. But it's also like, yeah, that's generally what I figured.
Yeah. No, look, a lot of that information is always out there and even going to the Palpatine stuff. And I think you hear a lot of, well, I shouldn't have to read that to understand it. And it's like, I don't think you do need to read that to understand it. You're just missing the theme of the point. Engage with it on that. But then for fans, then it's out there and you can get rewarded. And I do love putting that stuff together, you know? I love my maps. I love all that kind of stuff. So I'm probably going to take a run through Wikipedia over lunch today and kind of refresh myself on that.
Yeah, yeah. And I looked at the canon tab, and I'm sure there's other context, you know, back in the Legends days, although that was those were soon to end.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So I really liked that when Maul has, you know, had enough shadows pulled out of his mind, he's got his new goat legs instead of spider legs. And he's walking out in Dathomir and kind of pulling everything together. And he comments that the Force is out of balance, and that, you know, makes Savage go, yeah, yeah, the Clone Wars. But I think I love this idea that Maul is like, yeah, no, the Force is out of balance. Did that strike you that he thought of it that way too?
I didn't think about it too much until now. So great pull. Love that idea of just, you threw a curveball at me, and I love that.
Let me put some more context to what I mean and get your thoughts. I think it, for me, it's this kind of clarification that even a absolute dark sider like Maul is would go like, when I reach out to the Force, I sense the light, and I think it is, you know, hypocritical and a lie, and I reject that, and I sense the dark side, and they're both there, and I invest in the dark side because the light is weak and full of hypocrisy. But even within that philosophy, he reaches out and is like, whoa, damn.
Yeah.
The galaxy's out of balance. Balance is, you know, the light in the dark, kind of in this perfect symmetry. Mm. That's not what it is now. It is, there's so much darkness. So you can't imagine that Maul thinks that's a bad thing, but it is the way he chooses to say it. He doesn't say, the Force is as it should be, you know, the galaxy is consumed by darkness. He's like, oh, that's out of balance.
Yeah, there you go. And so now I got my bat in my hand ready to swing here. Thinking of it in the terms of like a Sith or a Sith affiliated person, they'd be excited and happy. Yeah, but I love what you're saying, and especially in this season 4, we've been talking about now that the Jedi slip sliding away. Man, to have him kind of feel it in that kind of way, that does take on more meaning.
Yeah, that just like all of the actions that Sidious has unleashed by starting the Clone Wars, and not only the violence, but, you know, the poverty and the loss of resources and all these different horrors that we've seen are rippling out. And there's just the galaxy is, the Force is out of balance. And even Maul looks at it that way is really an interesting idea to me.
Yeah. Definitely ties in the big picture too of what's going on. Love that.
Yeah, it speaks to like, yeah, no, that's the Sith goal is like, yeah, no, we want it to be out of balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Balance is not good. We want it to be all dark all the time. Yeah. I thought it was just a cool canon thing that I forgot that Savage does pick up Maul's original half blade.
Yeah, yeah. Very fun.
Yeah, I did a little Wikipedia dive there, too, tracking all of Maul's lightsabers. And he holds on to that one for a while and then refurbishes it in time for the final arc of the Clone Wars.
Mm, that's right. That's right. Got a little construction project coming up.
Yeah. So I do want to make sure to talk about diners. We have Plop Dribble. Plop Dribble Diner on Stobar. It does look really similar to Dex's. How do you feel that that's just how diners look in the galaxy?
I'm okay with it. It's oddly comforting. Like you and I talked about Dexter's Diner being so comforting and the purpose of that. I kind of love it. And I want like a show, like a Diners, Dive and Drives kind of show of just going around the galaxy's diners. It almost is with what... coming out of Attack of the Clones, and you got the Clone Wars series, and again, Revenge of Sith, but like the Clone Wars does this thing of just like, no, we're leaning into even the things that you might struggle with, because this is what we believe is all part of Star Wars. And I don't think it's a salt in the wound type of thing, but just like, no, this exists. There's diners and we got it. And this chef's got a frying pan in his hand, and there you go.
Yep. The robot cops, all sorts of stuff. It's really great. I really like it. That just being the aesthetic, and it adds to me of Anakin being like, I don't want these rations. I want to go to this, you know, diner. It feels to me like if you were in a city that you did not know, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And you're like, I could go back to the hotel and get, you know, order in hotel food. But look at that greasy diner. I recognize what that is, and I want to eat at one of those.
I just did that in D.C. We found a pub around the corner. We're like, we literally said to each other, Mark Ellis and I were like, this is where we're going to be every day.
Yep. Yeah. So I like that a lot. Also in the pub of a pub, the diner, a fun thing. No, it got me thinking about pubs. I want to sip a pint in near some dark wood. The droid, Marwego, calls the authorities after the incident with Savage Opress. And I forgot that that is very similar to the way that the resistant spy droid, GA-97, reports to 3PO in The Force Awakens of that. The eyes flash, and there's that a very similar kind of sound effect.
Like an old teletype almost. Yeah, I love that. A great pull. That stood out to me, too. Love that.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just it's always a reminder of just like there's a whole big team of people working on Star Wars, and they're making all these fun little connections always.
Yeah, yeah.
The bounty hunter that we met recently, Darren, is in the background of the cantina, eyeing up Anakin, which I thought was funny.
Right, yep.
I assume that's Darwin. It looks exactly like him.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Junkers, they were a cool design. Did they feel a little proto Jakku, like a little bit of connection to this sort of idea of people who scavenge in remote places for what they can get out of the trash?
Totally. A little Tito vibe. And then a little that the creature that kind of yells at Rey when she's taking her time cleaning there, looking up to the horizon, you know, the one that kind of comes at her in the beginning. Connection and obviously vibes of Jawas as well. Completely. Yeah. Loved it. Really, really good design. Really Star Wars like design.
Really Star Wars-like design. Yeah, they kind of remind me of that. There's that great, very quick moment in Force Awakens where that TIE fighter goes down in Rey and Finn's Falcon chase, and then the Junkers are out after it immediately.
Immediately, yeah.
Yeah. And then Raydonia, where the horrible slaughter takes place. Look that up. It does get name-checked in the Aftermath series. Wedge makes a report from Raydonia.
Oh, there you go. Love that.
Yeah, hopefully that Astromech's doing okay. Any other canon or lore connections that you spotted or wanted to discuss?
Just going back to the Clone Wars thing, too, with Maul, and just I remember loving back in the day, too, of just him saying, oh, yes, so it began without me, and how it just so has this vibe of, you know, you break up and your old partner takes that trip to Europe you guys were planning together. <You're> like, oh, yeah. they did that, and I'm not there. All right. Off the wound.
Yep. They went to Disney World without me.
And it just brings up the image of Palpatine and Maul sitting around having some, Sith tea, and then I'm going to have them buy a clone army, and then
I will set up my base in the Jedi Temple. It will be so wizard master. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very, very sad. You reminded me, that is the other thing that I did want to mention. I love the change in the color of the logo for these episodes to really drive home. Hey, it's Clone Wars, but we're going to hell, kids.
Yes. Love that.
Yeah. Do you like that, or is it too much?
No, not at all. Love it. And I think especially now seeing that after Season 7 being in the rearview mirror now, where they really played with the beginnings and with the colors and everything. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there anything then in these episodes that you disliked or questioned?
Nothing majorly. If you'd asked me back then, I would have been like, there's a talking snake, man. But love it all. Love how it all comes together. Because it's just hard for me to imagine that when New Hope begins and Luke's on Tatooine and he's looking up to the Star Destroyers, that also at the same time, there's probably an Anaconda somewhere in the galaxy. And it's sometimes a hard leap to be like, wait, that's the same universe. Okay. But no, it works. I mentioned the Palpatine thing. Like, I think it works about him. Palpatine's presence is very clearly felt. And in fact, going back to that line that you pointed out about the balance from Maul, love that. I don't think it needs it. I don't need it. It would have been too on the nose. But yeah, Palpatine's going to eventually have some thoughts on Maul. We know, but a little finger twitch of him going, something's happening, and seeing what he feels about that. I wouldn't have minded that.
Yeah. I think that is what I like about these episodes, and also feel tortured when I, in a good way, when I watch them, is they leave me wanting more, because it is really, it's the return of Maul. It's all of this insight, but you're waiting for the next shoe to drop, and it just it doesn't, right? It is really teeing up what is to come.
Yeah. And it does work. It does work. That's what I say. If they did it, it might've come across as too on the nose. Cause I really enjoy it when Palpatine is staring out the window going, oh, that Padme got me again. Like, I love those moments. I don't need that. But and again, we get it. It comes later on. So you're right.
Oh, yes, it does.
It's a trailer. And it leaves you kind of going, well, like I am. What does Sheev think? And you're going to find out.
Yeah. And, you know, I there's a part of me that will always, you know, wish that I had been on board watching these weekly. So having that cliffhanger at the end of a season going, like, oh, they got Sidious to deal with and Dooku and Grievous. Now they got Maul and Savage running around. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. Being a kind of cliffhanger for the end of a season works well.
Absolutely. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
I just mentioned it again, and we talked about a lot in the Ventress stuff, highlighting just how wonderful Katie Lucas is, a Star Wars writer, and coming in, and you know, she's moved on from Star Wars, left social media early on, seeing what happened to her father, and we can go to that. Jennifer Landa has a great episode, Happy Beeps. We can highlight it again, and it just, you know, I if she never touches foot in Star Wars land again, I would completely understand. But if there's ever a chance to have Katie Lucas, I think now Katie Rose, getting back into Star Wars, man, I'd be so excited. She's just so good. And so it was so young at the time. Such just kind of like, hey, you imagine George goes, hey, my daughter's going to wants to write. Like, of course she does. But she comes in, man, she delivers time and time again and puts so much of herself into the character of Ventress, but so much of herself into this. She's you talk about a Star Wars horror film. I want it from her. I want it from her. Just a fan of her work.
Yeah, she does just an amazing job with every bit of Star Wars that she has written and really, really made Asajj Ventress into such a fully fleshed out character, and a character that every time I watch Asajj Ventress episodes more, I just want to watch more Asajj Ventress because she has turned into such a compelling character, largely by everything that Katie Lucas added to her.
Absolutely.
The only other thing for me, not as big a deal, is a compliments to a great author, but the turtle tanker, I really love the way it lands and the little legs got to work to catch up.
It's the best. Designed after Filoni's pet turtle, apparently. And I didn't pick up on that right away. And there's that one shot of it landing and it's kind of a silhouette against the backdrop. And I was like, that looks like a turtle. Oh, I see what they did.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's one of my favorite things about Clone Wars of late. It's just like, we are always going to watch ships take all the way off,
yeah,
and they're going to land all the way too. It's just real love of the ships taking off and landing.
Little legs, got their little turtle legs.
Yeah, and it's like, whoa, that's too fast. We gotta run our little legs to catch up with this big ship landing.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah, it's so weird, and I love it. We always like to wrap up with the fun question of, if we could have any sort of figure or any sort of merch or toy from this episode, who or what do we want? Ken, where do you go with this?
I mean, I need a plush Morley, you know, just a kind of a to scale Morley I can wrap around, and just kind of, if it has a little button you can press and Ben Diskin's voice pops out, that'd be great. I've now fully come around on Morley. You know, I own a puffer pig, and after my years of campaigning against puffer pig, I have that puffer pig toy. So after years ago questioning the existence of Morley, I'd now like a Morley plush.
Yeah, I can't disagree with a Morley plush. That would be great. If it's a talking one, you squeezed it. Bye, breathers. They'll get you. Yeah, for my action figure, for my beloved 3 3/4, it has happened in so many episodes of season 4, but I really need a Rough Day Kenobi with that lock of hair out of place.
Oh, such a great pull on that lock of hair. I love that lock of hair. It so looks like he'd just been in a 1950s movie and been roughed up by street toughs.
And it falls out of place so many times this season because Kenobi has so many rough days. Yeah, and then spider leg Maul. So I have an action figure of Maul from this arc with the big legs, the two big legs that Mother Talzin gives him. But to my searchers, there is not an official spider leg Maul kind of realistic figure. So I'd love the spider leg Maul deluxe figure. But what I'd really like, Ken, is cruel to Maul. But I would like a trash can or recycling can that has spider leg Maul on the lid. And every time you open it to throw something away, it says Kenobi.
That's cruel. You're sassy like Kenobi.
Sassy like Kenobi. I'll take it. Well, that is our look at this arc of the Clone Wars. That's it for season 4 of Clone Wars. We also always like to talk about what is next. We are going to take a break for Book of Boba Fett because really watching these episodes and really breaking them down is a lot of work. So it's hard to keep up with Clone Wars Report when we're doing that every week for a new show. We're so excited for Book of Boba Fett. We are recording this on Tuesday, and we're going to be watching Book of Boba Fett at midnight. By the time this comes out, we're going to be so excited to have seen some Book of Boba Fett. When we get started back up with Clone Wars Report, we'll be launching into season 5, and we start going in chronological order. We skip that first episode. So we'll be talking about season 5, episode 2-5, which is the Onderon arc where we meet Saw Gerrera. We are, of course, excited about that. Ken, what should the moral of this episode of our podcast be?
When you're finding that your podcast is breaking apart technically, do not give in to rage. Push forward and heal yourself through compassion for the technology.
Have compassion for the broken internet spider legs that have... Hopefully you won't be able to detect it, listener. But we've been plagued. We've been plagued this episode.
Yes, we love using Zencastr. Not a sponsor, but we recommend it. But man, today we're having some problems. But we're here, like Maul. We're going to survive, but in a more peaceful way.
Exactly. Every once in a while, I think my internet connection is just like, why? Why? I don't feel like it right now. Okay, I'm back. All right. I apologize for my tantrum. I'm back. Anyway, this has been so much fun to discuss all of season 4, all of Clone Wars, and this particular arc. But for now, Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. On YouTube now, we release audio versions of our episodes if you like listening to podcasts that way. You can also find us on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. We're on tpublic.com/user/Force Center if you want to get some merch. If you want an audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/Force Center. Get an audiobook on us. And don't forget, you can support us directly if you want at patreon.com/Force Center. We are now on Acast, which means we're all in the normal spots, the Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all that. But new spots coming soon, including SoundCloud. Stay tuned for that. We'll confirm when we are added to that. We also have a special show going right now called Databank Dive. It's on the Companion app. You can find information when we tweet out promotion of the show. You can find the links to sign up and try out the Companion and listen to our show, Databank Dive. You can follow me at KatNapsock or go to my website, KatNapsock.com. Joseph, where can they go for you?
Yeah, you can find me on social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can also check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures. But for now, for myself, for Morley and his leftovers, and for Ken, this has been Force Center.